with me, the Deputy Trade, the Deputy Minister of Trade, Industry and Competition, Andrew Whitfield, having just returned from Washington, where you were negotiating with regards to the Africa Growth and Opportunities Act, AGOA, as we all know it. And Andrew, I've heard, seen you quoted a couple of times across media platforms saying that you left with a good feeling. You don't have details of a renewal in terms of the proposed 16 years. But let me hand to you at this stage in terms of where, what, why, when, and who in terms of AGOA.
Yes, well, I did leave with a positive feeling, and I think we left a positive feeling behind, which is also, I think, the more important part of the mission. South Africa's had a difficult time of it in the United States and in Washington over a number of years, and I think that the sentiment last week was incredibly positive, more positive than it's probably been in a very long time for a couple of reasons, and I'll come to those in a second, but you're absolutely right. We didn't get to negotiate the details of some of the changes that we'd like to see, the 16-year renewal period, although there was some positive sort of responses around that. We know that Senator Chris Coons has made some remarks in that regard. We know that the African trade ministers were singing the same hymn in that regard. And a large part of that is to create certainty for the business environment. A lot of, for example, textiles, their planning cycles are way beyond a year. And so the anxiety around this particular renewal and the desire for an early renewal the message was very strongly sent by a number of African states in Washington. So we had a very good diplomatic trade mission, if I can call it that, from the point of view of rebuilding relationships in Washington. And the minister was very clear that we have had an opportunity to reset a new government in South Africa, which presents a new opportunity to rebuild our relationships in Washington.
Deputy Minister, did you feel warmly received that we firmly, as South Africa, have a seat at the table?
Yes, absolutely. I think that one of the things people overlook, they look at the reasons why the United States want to, or some in the United States want to exclude us from AGOA. Security concerns, foreign policy concerns, whatever the case may be. But a key component of AGOA is democracy. And South Africa demonstrated remarkable resilience. Our people, our institutions, and the majority of our political parties finding a common ground, coming together and establishing a new government under new circumstances, where a majority party for the first time in a very long time in South Africa had fallen below 50%. And I think that is incredibly significant. And that was the very positive feeling that I think was left behind in Washington. So we were warmly received on that basis. There were engagements where issues around foreign policy were raised, not to the extent that we expected them to be. We aren't DIRCO, or the Department of International Relations. We are the Department of Trade. And so we tried to keep the conversations very much focused on the trade relationship and how that can benefit both of our countries. And so that was the key emphasis and the message in Washington.
The expiry is, of course, 2025, and there will be huge implications for farmers in particular if we don't see AGOA renewed. Now, I know that there is not much detail to share at this juncture, and of course, we have a US election that is going to sidetrack attention. But when is the next meeting, and what visibility do you have at least on that roadmap in terms of meeting again and sitting around the table?
Well, we can't trade on sentiment alone. And as positive as it was in Washington, it's not going to last forever. And so sentiment needs to be followed by substance, tangible deliverables, action steps, real technical discussions that need to take place. One of the positive outcomes, the tangible outcomes from our visit to Washington, was the reestablishment of the TIFA, which is the Trade and Investment Forum Agreement, where we are able to engage in bilateral discussions with the United States on key trade issues, blockages, technical issues, etc. And the minister has elevated it to his level, to a ministerial level. And so we are hoping that the minister and Ambassador Catherine Tai, the U.S. trade representative, will be able to have frequent engagements through that structured platform. And the minister has already indicated his willingness to return no later than September. And so I think that that also sends a message of urgency. Congress is in recess at the moment, so it wouldn't be beneficial to go too soon after our most recent visit. But September, Congress reconvenes. There'll be an opportunity to engage both sides of the House. And that is the commitment that the minister is making publicly, that he is keen to return on an urgent basis to continue the discussions. And a lot of those discussions, Bronwyn, you're correct, are centered around agriculture. You know, how much chicken do we bring in, and whether we take pork, and whether we can get avos out, and how much citrus we can get in. And so it is a fascinating discussion. I described it to somebody the other day as a wonderfully complex problem to have to solve. And it's just such a dynamic space to operate in, where we've got a changing global trade environment as well, which is putting pressure on a lot of these agreements and these relationships. So I think that the minister understands the urgency. He's working with urgency. The impact on the agricultural sector is absolutely front of mind. But bear in mind, I'm coming to you from Kabeche, Nelson Mandela Bay, where the automotive sector, and just down the road in East London, Mercedes-Benz, we've got Volkswagen and Ford here in Nelson Mandela Bay, amongst other component manufacturers, will also feel the pressure. And so we really are serious about sitting around the table and sorting out those issues which may still exist.
Just remind us of the hard stop come 2025 in terms of expiry.
So as I understand it, it is September 2025. So the minister will be hopefully returning to Washington. I can't commit on his behalf, but certainly that's what it sounds like, is that he'll be going in September now this year. Obviously pushing for an early renewal, Bronwyn. I mean, that was one of the other key messages that the trade ministers and others said, look, we've got investors that need to plan. We need to make commitments, and AGOA, the framework of AGOA and that planning cycles need to be aligned as best as possible, and an early renewal would help us. We don't know about an early renewal because there's an election coming up. You may have heard about it, and it's taking place in November. So that means Congress reconvenes in September. They go on recess again to campaign for November. Congress is reestablished, I think, during the course of November, and then we go into this lame duck period before the inauguration of a new president. And whichever way it falls, there will be a new president. Whether it's a continuation of the current administration.
Let's pursue that thought for a moment. Whichever way it falls in terms of the 5th of November, will there be a renewal on AGOA? Or is it very dependent on who we see inaugurated as President of the United States?
So the message from Washington to all African trade ministers was that AGOA is one of those pieces of legislation that has bipartisan and bicameral support. So both in the Senate and the House of Representatives, in the Republicans and the Democrats. And that has been the case for 24 years. I think there were some nervous times in 2015, 10 years ago, when it seemed that AGOA was coming to an end. And I think that a lot of African states have still got some room to improve in terms of benefiting from AGOA. I think there's some room to improve then and to convince the Americans. So I think that we are in a position where we've got currently strong bicameral bipartisan support. I think that the outcome of the election is a critical component. I don't think we can ignore that. We know from a previous term of office that President Trump had moved towards more protectionist measures, isolating America from the rest of the world, or attempting to do so. And that does cause concern. I don't think, however, people realize how bipartisan Congress actually is. And Congress is distinctly separate from the administration in many, many ways. And so we hope that that robust partnership between the administration in the White House and Congress continues, because that would bode well for us. So I can't predict with any certainty. Let's just say it's reasonably volatile.
Reasonably volatile, we'll take that. Let's talk about the African Continental Free Trade Area, because Minister Parks Tau emphasized the importance of AFCFTA aligned to AGOA.
Yeah, so I mean, one of the key discussions amongst the African trade ministers, and I had the privilege of being thrown in the deep end and having to moderate a discussion with the African trade ministers around how do we harmonize AGOA and the African Continental Free Trade Area. The discussions centered around, what does AGOA expand its mandate into North Africa? Or, you know, how do we regulate this environment? How do we create the rules? And that's a discussion that's only really just beginning. But there seem to be some good proposals on the table in terms of how we can create harmony. I think there's a lot of anxiety around the fact that this early renewal is looking unlikely. We're confident that South Africa will be part of a renewal. We remain confident in spite of the electoral outcome. Obviously, there are different circumstances in which we would have to negotiate after the elections, depending on that outcome. But the issue of renewal, as far as I'm concerned, remains in place. And I think that we're in a good position at the moment, Bronwyn.
Just talking about the conversation that you said you thought you would face more of, and that is around potentially global relations. Here, I'm going to go straight to the likes of Russia and China. Were there any questions asked about our coziness with Russia or China?
Yes, I mean, there were questions that were raised. Perhaps I was fortunate not to be part of all the meetings because I arrived a day late. And so I think some of the more robust engagements were with the minister the day before. But I think generally it was expected, and it did come up. And the minister reaffirmed South Africa's non-aligned position and spoke about perceptions versus reality, and that the conversation does need to continue, but we are serious about rebuilding our relationship with Washington. I think a large part of the tension in the relationship was a lack of maintenance of the relationship, clear, consistent communication over a number of years. And I think that the United States also understands that South Africa is entitled to determine its own foreign policy as a sovereign state. But equally, they have concerns which are built in to the AGOA Act, right, around security issues, foreign policy issues, etc. And so I think it will be an ongoing discussion. I don't think it's just South Africa that has that discussion, although of late, I think we've been the centerpiece and focus of that discussion. And as I said to you earlier in the interview, it wasn't the primary focus of the discussions. The primary focus of the discussions was an opportunity to reset our relationship in this incredibly resilient democracy of ours with a new government.
I do want to chat a little around the Government of National Unity and the Department of Trade, Industry and Competition's critical role in the success of the government. Could you give us a sense of what the first couple of months, I suppose, what, a couple of weeks, what has transpired and how are negotiations going around the table, so to speak, around your own boardroom table at the Department of Trade, Industry and Competition?
So it's a different story if you're a minister versus a deputy minister. And I think that the requirement where I'm sitting is the importance of building a strong relationship with the other deputy minister and the minister, who are both from the ANC. I am not. And so we've got a real GNU department here. And a lot of scope, in fact, to tag team on issues. And there will be disagreements. Let me just say that at the outset, there haven't been any fundamental agreements yet because we've been too busy to sit around a table and really thrash out the policy issues. We've been engaged in meetings. We've been in Washington. We've been dealing with the budget in Parliament. So we are being kept busy. Those conversations will happen. They will be robust. But my commitment has been to make them respectful. And I don't think that there's anything wrong with that. In fact, in individual companies or political parties, there are internal disagreements all the time. And I think that this is really a test of our maturity as a democracy and as public representatives who represent the people of South Africa who've put us in this situation. So you're right, it hasn't been a couple of months. If it had been a couple of months, I may have a different answer for you. But it has been, I think, about 3 weeks. I'm back in Gqeberha, which is my hometown, I think, for the third day in the last 4 weeks, which is unusual for me. So we've been incredibly busy. So far, we are working really well together. And I think it was a tremendous opportunity to build the relationship in Washington and to demonstrate to the world that we are mature leaders working together in a government of national unity towards the best interests of our country and our people. And a new opportunity exists to strengthen our relationships through that GNU. I am 150% committed. I know the minister is committed as well. There will be dissenting views in all political parties. Of that, I'm certain. But the reality is that we have to choose a pathway to prosperity or a pathway to poverty for South Africa. The majority of political parties have chosen the pathway to prosperity. We now have a responsibility to make it work. Not going to be easy, but we are committed to making the partnership work.
And is there an acknowledgement within your department of the importance that the Department of Trade and Industry and Competition plays when it comes to galvanizing South Africa's growth. All eyes are looking to you to say, help unlock avenues for economic growth. That must be pressure that is felt when it comes to the corridors of the Department of Trade and Industry.
Absolutely, Bronwyn. There is a very serious sort of growth-focused conversation that is taking place. The president made it clear at our Lekgotla a couple of weeks ago, where he said that inclusive growth and job creation are our apex priority, right, in developing our medium-term development plan. But that is going to require a whole-of-government approach, right? So setting aside the obvious importance of the private sector for one moment, in the port of Mucha in Nelson Mandela Bay, we have containers piling up for 14 days. That is not a DTIC direct competency, but it affects our economy. So the constraints on our economy extend to other government departments. And I've made the plea to the minister and the department that we operate in a much more transversal fashion, that we are able to engage other departments to unlock the opportunities to try and solve the problems together. And that includes bringing the private sector on board. And I think that that partnership with the private sector has already yielded some positive benefits in the reforms we're seeing in the energy sector, amongst others. So I believe growth is it's a non-negotiable. Everybody understands it. I think the debate comes around how, Bronwyn, which policies are working and which haven't worked. Have these policies been given enough time to work? Are we using evidence to determine our policy trajectory, or are we using emotion and ideology? And of course, in the DTIC, there will be an element of ideology that informs policy, right? That is the nature of things. But we must make sure that we have a mature enough environment to consider the evidence and to review certain decisions or policies and say, right, this has worked, let's double down on it. This hasn't worked, how do we reinvent and repurpose this program or this policy to be directed towards that inclusive growth and job creation that the president demands? So the answer is yes.
That's music to many people's ears in terms of the fact that there will be data-based evidence to decide the path to follow going forward in terms of what has worked and what hasn't worked. In fact, I was chatting to Vinnie Lingham yesterday in San Diego, tech entrepreneur, South African born, who was really just stressing the fact that, you know, he found South Africa uninvestable because of the red tape and the inability to start a business quickly, open a business quickly. So hopefully, and again, I may be speaking out of turn in terms of what falls into your ambit, it's going to be collaboration across the government quarters to get South Africa firing on all cylinders. But Deputy Minister, just celebrating that, you know, data will be deployed to make those decisions, and hopefully decisions will be made quickly. I suppose that's perhaps my last question, is that many have said that one of the challenges of a government of national unity is coming to that decision point because you have so many varied opinions at the table. Do you see that as a stumbling block, or do you think that we will see efficient, effective decision making? And then the appropriate accountability for those decisions.
Well, government by nature is slow, and we don't have the benefit of being slow. And I talk about governments all over the world, not just in South Africa. They are enormous institutions. They are complex. They operate in silos, which is why I've made the point around transversal operations management. How do we collaborate with other government departments? So yes, absolutely. We need to be able to take quick decisions, and the political parties will have to win some and lose some, right? And I think that, again, it comes back to the maturity to understand the urgency of the situation, the ability to get your way, and accept maybe that sometimes you're not going to get everything that you want. And that is, it is going to be difficult. But here's the thing. Yes, and I just want to refer to the discussion around data and evidence. Evidence-based policymaking is a centerpiece of the statement of intent. So it's actually in the statement of intent that we must use evidence, right, to direct not just our policymaking, but evidence-led decision-making, right? So use the evidence to make policy, but then don't ignore that policy. Use that policy to make the decision. So that I just wanted to make that point. The reality is that the urgency is not just for the economy, but for the individual political parties. If we don't shift the needle on growth and employment in the next 2, 3, 4, hopefully 5 years, and hopefully sooner, but we've got 5 years to prove ourselves. But I don't think we've got 5 years to prove ourselves. We've got a local government election in 2026, and we need to be able to show tangible deliverables by then. And the key thing people are looking at is growth and jobs. And that is where the DTIC is absolutely critical. And I would just say that as much as there will be disagreements and differing views around ideologically based policy positions, whatever the case, there are a lot of process issues which are not contentious, right? There are process issues and delays in approvals, systems inefficiencies. Those things can be addressed quite easily. And so I'm busy looking at how we can find common ground on issues around process, so that that can balance out as well any disagreements that may occur around ideology. And I think just by fixing processes, and I'll give you one example on the merger process, can take up to 24 months to approve a merger. There's a reason for that I won't go into, but I mean, the process is not just cumbersome, but, you know, I think micromanagerial in many ways. And I think we can shorten that and start to make South Africa more investable. There are lots of little mechanisms at our disposal. And I think that if we can unlock those process issues, that will immediately make a huge impact on our investability as a country.
Appreciate your time, Deputy Minister, Trade, Industry and Competition, Andrew Whitfield, here on BizNews.